Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. You know what that means. You've chosen us to hang out with you to get you through the work week. And for that, we are forever grateful. Today, Kyle's coming in with round four of some Roswell information. So if you haven't listened to round one, two, and three, you need to go back and do that. If you're new here, we talk about some things, go through some show notes, do all kinds of stuff. If you don't want to listen to that, you're going to want to fast forward. I know it's a big ask to hit that 15-second scroll ahead button, but hey, what can we do? What can we do?
We're doing what we can.
Yep. If you want to hang out and listen to us, feel free. Feel free. Welcome. Welcome in, weirdos. If you're not new here, you know the drill. Welcome back. Yeah. Check us out all our socials. You know how it is. If you've got a paranormal experience you like to share for a future show, Kyle's got some info for you.
I do. And it's definitely going to start being more pertinent. It's going to be hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. You're going to write your story out, shoot it over to that email. We're going to get it and record it. Put it into the new show. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. You're going to be famous AF.
It's science.
It's also in the show notes, and it's definitely science.
Yeah.
It's a scientific fact.
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy. If you'd like to support the show, all sorts of things you can do. Tons of things you can do. You can go to Patreon, and over there, you can get a whole bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. Patreon-exclusive episodes. You can get ad-free episodes, which I know is a big thing. Nobody wants to listen to ads. You talk about it in Spotify comments. I get it.
I think it's a measly $3 a month for ad-free.
You can get no ads over there. Then you don't have to exhaust your thumbs fast-forwarding. Because I know that nobody has time to hit the fast-forward button 16 times. What else over there? All sorts of stuff. You get ad-free. You get early drops. All sorts of good things. You can go to hollowskypodcast.com. Check out the merch over there. We got shirts, hats, stickers, all kinds of good stuff coming up. Got a couple new designs for shirts dropping shortly. Kyle just spun up another new one that's pretty sick.
And I think, I know we've said it like 40 times, but I think this is the hoodie. The hoodie image.
It's pretty sick.
I'm in love with it. I'm in love with it. It's very nostalgia for Steve and I.
Yeah.
I think you guys are going to love it.
Yeah, it's pretty sick, especially if you're an old metalhead like us.
Yeah.
Best thing you can do is share the show word of mouth. Just keep spreading the virus that is the Hollow Sky Podcast. Just keep it, keep on keeping on. You know how it is. You know how it is. Share it with all your weird friends. Share it with all your podcast friends. You can also support our narrator adventure we got going on here by checking out our friend Tom Lyon's book, The Woods Behind Our Home. So far, we've narrated 3 of the 5. I don't think the third one's dropped yet, but it's getting close. So if you want more of our sultry voices, go to Amazon, check that out, Audible, wherever audiobooks are sold. You can hear us reading some spooky stuff. Where are we at? Oh, yeah. Last thing, go to wherever you listen to podcasts, leave us a 5-star rating and review. If I find it, I'll gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend NMP Curiosity Over Fear. Mm-hmm. Great name. 5 stars. Curiosity of the Weird. The universe dropped the Hollow Sky Boys, Steve and Kyle, into my lap, and I have not stopped listening since. Steve and Kyle have a genuine interest and passion in all the weirdo topics they cover. In a world where everyone has a jaded look on high strangeness, Steve and Kyle look at everything and present it. That's it. No pushy narrative, and they have a great sense of humor.
Thank you.
Yes, we do. Please listen. They are worth it. Star Trek emoji.
Yes.
Live long and prosper. I don't know anything about Star Trek. I hope that's right. Curiosity Over Fear, thank you so much for leaving us a 5-star rating and review, for the kind words, pointing out our impeccable sense of humor.
This is true.
Funniest guys funniest guys I know.
Same. I don't know anybody better.
Yeah. So that's how it is.
Yeah.
Another way you can support the show is supporting our wonderful sponsors and friends that you're going to hear from right about now.
My name is Ryan Sprague. When I was 12 years old, my father and I stared up into the night skies, and we saw something extraordinary staring back. And whatever it was sent me on a search to find answers to the UFO phenomenon and beyond. And that search continues somewhere in the skies. Coming to you from Spectre Vision Radio, the Somewhere in the Skies podcast features conversations, interviews, and roundtable discussions with scientists, scholars, historians, pop culture figures, and prominent UFO researchers. We also hear directly from you, the listeners, about your personal UFO sightings and encounters. Lastly, we bring you fascinating and engaging case histories and audio documentaries. Each week is something different and truly unique. Somewhere in the Skies doesn't seek to just entertain. We seek the truth. We bring new questions and theories to the table. We bring new voices to the discussion. And we attempt to possibly find some answers to those mysteries that lay somewhere in the skies. New episodes are every Monday through Spectre Vision Radio on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And just like that, we are back. Diving back into the Roswell weirdness. It's been a great series so far. Like I said earlier, if you haven't listened yet, go back, check out episodes 1 through 3 before you get into this one. You're not going to want to miss it. Some like Roswell is one of the biggest UFO case, hands down, bar none, period. And I'm still, Kyle's presenting stuff that I haven't heard.
Well, the ball's going to keep rolling in that direction. I'm going to end it with this episode. So this will be the last in the series. But there's still, and I'm not exaggerating, there's still so much information that could be covered with Roswell. And just testimonies alone. And that's still like the same direction we go in this episode. I do cover a little bit more from the body section, and then we get into deathbed confessions.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's kind of how we're gonna end this episode. But we're gonna, like I said, pick up kind of where we left off. It's also amazing, before we get into it, it's amazing to sit and read these accounts because you never truly realize how big an event is until you sit and you read all these firsthand accounts. And I have a fraction of them in the episodes that I've presented so far. As a prime example, we have a Corporal Arthur Fleury, and he said him and a buddy whose name was Paul Camarito had transferred over from the motor pool to the base's medical unit. They had become ambulance drivers, and during the Roswell incident, they were assigned to transport between the airstrip and the hospital base. Fleury said that there were doctors, both military and civilian, and he says flying from all over the world. Now, that wasn't necessarily proven. However, you could at least imagine that people were flying from all over the country into this, which just goes to show how big this was. On such a quick basis, you're talking a day or two, maybe 3 days, and now all of a sudden they've got doctors, both military and civilian, flying in from all over the country, bare minimum country, possibly the world, to examine these creatures.
Do you think when they contacted civilian doctors and surgeons or what have you, do you think they let them know?
No.
I don't either. I think they were just like, hey, we've had a military incident out here in Roswell. We need you guys to fly in. Can you imagine landing and walking in on that?
Actually, I think I have a case or two in this episode that is similar to that.
That would be bonkers.
Crazy. Fucking nuts. On this next bit, I spoke about it a little bit already, but we're going to revisit it. Glenn Dennis. And if you don't remember, he was the guy that worked at the mortuary that got the call about the little kid caskets, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Drake Baylor's was a small grocery store that had a coffee nook, and people in town would frequent it just to chit chat, have a little bit of coffee. Well, of course, at this time, the UFO crash was all the craze in town, and that's all anybody was talking about. Now you have Adam Dutchover. He was a little kid who would serve coffee to the customers. And he remembered hearing people from the police department, the Ballard Funeral Home. They were speaking about the little bodies. And Ballard's people were speaking about the small caskets that they needed. This is what Adam had remembered. Then you have Garner Mason of Hagerman, whose father, grandfather, and uncles all run this family mortuary, that said their family was the one that made the delivery to the RAAF base hospital because Ballard's had called them and said, hey, we don't have enough small caskets to fill this order, so we need some help filling the order. So there's more corroboration to Dennis's story. Then you have, or another interesting story was that Beverly Otto lived and worked for the National Institutes of Health. Well, her and a group of women, they would get together, have dinner. Kind of made it like a monthly thing. It was just after Roswell, and they were joined by a friend of a friend for dinner that night. She said it was an Army nurse, and as they had been kind of chatting and getting to know each other, the nurse was, you know, like, I came from Roswell, and now I'm stationed at the Walter Reed Hospital. So the women kind of started to razz her a little bit, and they're like, oh, you know, did you by chance see the little green men? And the nurse immediately was like, oh, yeah, I did. I did actually see them. And she's like, I was actually the one that called and ordered the children's caskets, because they were little guys who, you know, came from this spaceship. And wasn't long after this, that nurse got transferred and was never seen again by those women.
Weird. Weird.
Which is crazy how much they got paid attention to.
Yeah. It's wild to me that I feel like the paranormal community as a whole has kind of lost that sort of investigative journalism where you go into these small towns and you go to the coffee shops, you go to the bars, you go to where people hang out, and you actually like boots on the ground interview people.
Yeah.
Which I think the prominence of the internet has kind of taken that away. Hellier's one, like, I know I reference them a lot, but that, like, that was what was so cool about them when they initially got their goblin email. They went to the town and started asking people,
which is awesome.
And
it takes special people to do that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think
it's not easy to do, to go into a brand new community as just that. But on top of that, you're going in there to ask about things that are taboo.
Yeah.
Even in today's world, they're still considered taboo.
Yep. And it's especially now, I feel like people are so disconnected. To have somebody come up to you and be like, hey, have you seen a UFO? You're going to be like, get away from me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people. Definitely. Not me. I'll be like, fuck yeah, let's talk about it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I just think it's absolutely.
It's cool how back then, all like that was the social media hub, you know?
Yeah.
The coffee shop or the bar or the diner, and it's just cool hearing about it, I guess.
I kind of low-key wish times were still like that.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah,
because especially now as we get older, because that would be more prominent in our life.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it would make life overall a little bit more exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how many times you hear about all these investigators, even with relatively within the last few decades, when they wanted to go talk about something, you go to a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
You go to your favorite restaurant where it's noisy, you can talk, people don't eavesdrop anymore. Yep. It's kind of wild.
Yeah. Another person that got to see the bodies was Elazar Benavides. He was, I'm probably not saying that right, but whatever.
I think you nailed it.
I did, naturally. He was a private first class with the 390th. Monday, July 7th, 1947, he was headed back to his barracks, but something was going on that morning, and he noticed a ton of staff cars and other vehicles in the parking lot, which was not normal. Word was given to his unit to be ready for special duty. Shortly later, he was told to grab his gun and head to Hangar P3. So he gets there and starts looking for the officer in charge to get his duties. And instead of that happening, he witnesses a commotion. Some of the MPs were trying to subdue an out-of-control officer. This officer was actually the one he was supposed to report to and get his orders. However, this dude was freaking the fuck out. Later on, he finds out the officer had been at the crash site, and when he got to the hangar and witnessed the secret items, he lost his shit. Anyways, Elazar hears someone say, "You, come over here. You're in charge now, bud. Get these over to the hospital immediately." So now, poor little Elazar's like, fuck.
Who, me?
Yeah. He's like, all right, whatever. Dude points him to the gurneys inside the hangar. All of them are covered by a sheet. One of the gurneys, though, wasn't like the rest. Something was moving underneath. It didn't matter, though. Elazar ordered the men to load the gurneys onto the truck for the transfer. At this point, he didn't know what was under the gurneys. That was until, while they were loading them, one of the gurneys slipped and the sheet covering it fell off. He said he saw a swollen gray face that was hairless. He didn't know what it was, but what he did know is that it wasn't fucking human.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So he took these things to the hospital, and when he got there, the medical staff greeted him and took the body. Once they had it in the room, they pulled the sheet off, and Elazar said he could see these little egg-shaped heads. It had slanted eyes, two holes where the nose should be, and a small slit where the mouth should have been. He's pretty sure it was alive and noted that the medical staff was kind of just standing there, dumbfounded, staring at it. So that kind of goes to a little bit of what you may have suggested earlier about how if they had told them what was, you know, happening or not. The fact that these people are standing there dumbfounded.
Surprise.
Yeah. Like, oh,
it's
shit.
It's aliens.
Oh, shit. So from here, he was relieved and debriefed and made to sign NDAs. He was told that if he were to ever speak of this, something very bad would happen to him. Not only to him either. They would come after his family. Which is almost always a surefire way to get to somebody.
Yep. You can get a lot done when you threaten people's families.
Oh, yeah. His wife even recalls him telling about those events. And she said, to this day, what he saw that night still haunts him. Which is crazy.
I don't know. Yeah. It would be a life-defining moment, especially if Absolutely. You consider the times. Like, seeing an alien now would be fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're kind of immune to it now. You know, someone kind of compared the amount that we interact with the paranormal, you build up a tolerance to it, almost like a drug. You know, the first time you're like, holy shit. But then the next time it's like, that wasn't nearly as crazy. And the next time you're like, meh, Man, but in 47, especially at the height of disc UFOs and little green men and shit, you get shown an alien just out of nowhere, especially when you're not briefed about it or anything. That's going to be a life altering experience.
Oh yeah, it's going to come in like a wrecking ball, man.
Yeah.
From there, we have a Lynn Stringfield. Apparently, he was one of the first researchers to take UFO crash retrieval seriously. Lynn was able to meet with a medical contact that told him all about the bodies at Roswell. And I can only fucking imagine being able to sit down and have this conversation. Because this medical professional took part in the autopsy of one of these beings. Here is what Lynn was able to learn from the doctor about these bodies. The being was humanoid, 3.5 to 4 feet tall, and weighed about 40 pounds. The head was much larger than a human head. It had two large round eyes, but one source said that the eyes were oriental or mongoloid. They were deep and wide apart. Its nose was vague, a very slight protrudence. The mouth was a small slit and opened into a slight cavity. The mouth did not function as means of communication or as an orifice for food ingestion. The being had no teeth either. It didn't have any earlobes or ears at all. The head had no hair, but apparently did have, or they apparently noticed that it had a slight fuzz. The neck was thin, and the same with the torso. The arms were long and thin. The hands reached to close to the knee. A slight webbing was noticed between the fingers. The skin in question was not green. It was beige, a tan brown, or maybe even a slightly pinkish. Some said it almost had a bluish gray to it. The texture was described as scaly or reptilian. It was also stretchable, elastic, or mobile over smooth muscle. Under magnification, the tissue structure appears mesh-like, which resembles granular-skinned lizards like the iguana and the chameleon. The bodies also had no reproductive systems and no genitalia. They had a colorless liquid throughout the body. No red blood cells were detected either. They were not a carrier of oxygen, or maybe the blood or liquid was not a carrier of oxygen. And it was noted that no food or water intake is known for them. It had no digestive system or GI tract, no intestinal or alimentary canal or rectal area, which is bizarre. It sounds like a updated version of us, like some people have theorized, but there is a lot missing.
Yeah, or almost some sort of non-biological being, you know, some sort of. Did it say anything about the bone structure?
I think we get to that okay. Later.
Yeah. Because everything almost sounds like genetically modified. You know, the skin sounds almost prosthetic and. There's no blood in it. It almost sounds like almost like a some sort of lubrication sort of thing. Like it's bizarre.
Well, now that I think about it, what if they got it wrong? What if extraterrestrial, the Greys in particular, are not the evolution of man? What if they are the evolution of cyborgs? The idea of robots.
Could there?
Because like you sitting there saying that just made me think like, oh shit. We think of robots and cyborgs as a very particular way. What if they're the evolution of that? What if an entity got so good at making these things, it made them more biological for whatever reason?
Makes you wonder.
It actually really does.
There's this theory that. You know how the phenomena comes in waves, right? Almost like every human epoch, the phenomena is different. Sometimes they show up as gods. Sometimes they show up as lights in the sky. Sometimes they show up as UFOs and little green men. And there's a theory going around that maybe the next epoch is AI. That's why it came in. This is the next evolution of the phenomena, is that AI is doing all this. So that kind of falls in line.
It's interesting. Now we have a man who was a crew chief for the Roswell Fire Department, and he actually showed up to the crash site. Dan Dwyer and Lee Reeves were actually dispatched to head out there, and when they got there, they saw an egg-shaped craft and three little bodies on the ground. When all of a sudden, out of the corner of his eye, he literally sees a little creature walking in front, like up to him.
I would lose it.
Either it was coming at him or just walking, you know, it was walking in front of him. He saw it walking.
If it was coming at me, there'd be four bodies going back.
It's crazy. Dwyer goes home, starts talking to his family about it. His daughter asked him what they looked like, and he called it, which Steve, if you don't know what it is, you should probably Google this right now. He said that the being resembled Child of the Earth. And for those of you that do not know that, because I did not know that, it's also known as the Jerusalem cricket. They are a kind of bizarre grasshopper.
Oh no.
That does kind of have a head like a fucking alien.
Oh no.
It's weird looking, right?
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
It's weird.
Yeah. Slap some big eyes on that thing, and that's...
It's pretty close to an alien head.
Yeah, don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I didn't know about them at all.
What a weird name, too.
Very weird name.
Sus.
Yeah, definitely. It's gross. Creepy little fucks.
Yeah, I wish I wouldn't have done that. All the more reason for me to want to fight them.
Yeah. All right, so another doctor. A Dr. Foster. She was a human spinal cord expert. She was sent to Washington to examine the spinal cords of these bodies that had been retrieved, which goes to show where all the bodies ended up. This time they were in Washington. She reported that one of the creatures was still alive but severely injured. This one that was alive was in fact sent to Washington, but soon died due to its injuries.
R.I.P.
And I want you to keep that in mind, because I do have a theory later on. She was sent to check out the overall bone structure and spinal cords of the beings. They wanted her to focus on the cervical spine, thoracic spine, below and behind the chest. They wanted her to take her time and really check the spinal nerves. She did observe differences in the number of vertebrae, not much with bone structure, but she noticed the absence of specific internal organs. However, she did not elaborate further on the findings. When she returned from Washington, she changed. Her housekeeper, that was a personal friend, said she saw a change that just got worse and worse. Dr. Foster became distant and didn't really talk to anyone anymore. Once again, she was debriefed and told, if you talk, you will lose your license to practice and probably be killed.
I mean, that's a pretty good reason not to say anything.
But here again, we have a medical professional that is sent, probably unknowing, into a situation to observe the skeleton structure, the bone structure of a being, and it mentally shatters them.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, like, it makes you question things, you know, like it's crazy to me that a medical professional of all people would have their mind shattered by that.
Yeah.
Because, and I know it's not the same thing, But in a way, how is that any different from, say, what if we had just found a bizarre primate?
Bigfoot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just what if we found Bigfoot? Like, why doesn't her brain break the same way it does with the possibility of ET? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think in this particular case, a lot of it has to do with the time period being in the late 40s.
Yeah, and that is probably a big determining factor from my questioning versus back then.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it because essentially, if she started digging around in there and found proof that this was an actual living biological being, then everything she knew up to that point is different now.
Yeah.
Everything's changed. We are not the only entity on the planet. And it's the 40s, you know, like there's a lot of God-fearing people in America. And now are we the only ones made in God's image? What does this guy got here on the table that doesn't look like us? Whose image was it made in?
Well, maybe to be fair, maybe that's what fucks some of these people up so much, is that they did look similar enough to us.
Yeah, that too.
So they were similar enough to us. However, they were different enough to know that they were not from this planet.
Which I think even now, even in 2026, if that happened, if we had an actual specimen, I think it would fuck a lot of people up.
I agree, but there's also a part of my brain that's like, but why?
Yeah. I think a lot of us in this community would be like, yeah, we've been trying to tell you that. But there's a lot of people who, like, we are a small fraction. Even today, we are a small fraction of the populace.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And I think if that's proven 100% real, we have a specimen of whatever this creature is from wherever it came from. It is not here. It is not us. It is nothing that's ever been on this planet before, so to speak. I think a lot of people would be like, oh, fuck.
You're probably right.
This changes a lot of things. But us right. Over here, we're going to be like, yeah, we've been trying to tell you that. You know, like, yeah. It won't change things for us. We'll be like, yeah, we literally heard hundreds of thousands of people talk about having experiences with these beings. And a lot of you people just turned a blind eye to it and thought people were crazy. Now who's crazy?
Right. And it kind of gets crazier from there because the bodies were reported to move around a lot. There were at least two testimonies seeing the bodies in Texas in 1964. So that's almost 20 years after the incident. There were reports at Lackland Air Force Base and another at Randolph Air Force Base. The one that was alive had many reports. Some say it went to Wright Field, White Sands, Los Alamos. Some rumors suggest that it never left Roswell. And then you just had Dr. Foster's account said it was in Washington. You have John Tilley's account that said they shot it at Roswell base.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, especially with there being such a time period, because that one was 20 years difference. It makes you wonder if these are the same bodies.
Bingo.
Because even
that's my theory.
Between Roswell, the encounters at Roswell, you have deceased bodies, but you have people encountering the beings and they're walking. They're obviously not in that bad a shape, but you get to Washington where Dr. Foster sees them, and she said that alien was in such bad shape that it died there.
Exactly.
That's a big difference from being able to walk around.
And we even have another account later on that says something different.
See? Something sus.
That's exactly what I said when I have a theory, is that I, bare minimum, there were more bodies there. There were more beings there than what is initially being reported.
Because what was the first report? 3 dead, 1 alive?
Yes.
And
a lot of people do have those numbers. A lot of people have those numbers. However, 3 crash sites.
That's exactly.
I remember there was an example that was given that maybe here was a crash site, but it was almost like either the crash continued or an injection pod happened and went on to the next.
Yep.
So it's highly possible that there were more bodies, or like you're saying, who's to say their friends didn't try to come pick them up?
And I'm curious as to how many caskets, because we haven't heard that yet, how many caskets were ordered and delivered?
I don't know that they had an exact number.
Because if there were only 3 bodies, they'd only need 3 caskets, mm-hmm. which ain't that much. I know Roswell was a tiny little town, but still, you'd think they would at least have 1 or 2 on hand because... Yeah,
there's kids.
Unfortunately, children die.
Yes.
So it makes me think that there is probably more going on than even what we're being told as to what we were being told.
See, and I absolutely agree with that, because after reading as many accounts as I did, reading this book, looking into it, I do feel like even with all the testimonies, I still feel like there are massive pieces of this puzzle that are hidden.
It's almost like smoke screen for a smoke screen for a smoke screen for a smoke screen.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
You know, because there's a thought in my head, especially with someone like Dr. Foster in this being. Like, it almost makes you wonder if...
Hey, Holocult. If you've been around a minute, you've heard us talk about Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. Mood's found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you want. If you are new here, I'm talking about Mood.com. Mood has an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo HOLO. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplement that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for. Are you having trouble sleeping? Try the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies for a mind-soothing calm each night. You need an extra boost of energy, some mental focus? Try the Morning Delta 9 gummies. If you're having trouble concentrating, you need some deep focus and enhanced creativity, try the Mind Magic gummies. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. You can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood in usually as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned before, Hollow Sky listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head over to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use our promo code HOLO when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at Mood.com. And that's promo code HOLO.
She was informed on like their intentions, or there was some type of communication with these beings, and this is what they're really here for. Because a lot of these people are fucked for life after running into these beings.
She could have telepathic communication with it before it died.
Bro.
She could have telepathic communication with it after it died.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's like the fact that there are so many hard men too, hard military men that did time in World War II that see these things, and they are fucked for the rest of their life.
And I mean, think about the implication. Like, obviously, you know that they can You know that their physical form can die because they were found dead.
Yes.
But we have no idea how their body worked. They don't have lungs. They don't breathe oxygen. They don't have blood. They don't have hearts. How the fuck do we kill these things?
Right.
Because we're only privy to killing things that have and do all those things.
Yep.
You know, that you'd have to start over from ground zero.
Exactly.
Which is like, even in a military context, like, you're fighting an enemy you know nothing about.
And that in itself would be terrifying.
Yeah. How do you fight something you don't know how to kill?
Yeah.
You know it can die. Mm-hmm. Well, its physical form can die, which even that, like, think of the implications of that. If that's just a physical body, what if whatever was controlling that physical body, what if it automatically, like, possessed one of the other fucking military men that were there? Like, the dude that was freaking the fuck out. How do you know that the consciousness of that being didn't go into him? And they're like, oh shit, now we gotta, kind of like an Independence Day.
Yeah.
Right? When he...
I mean, bare minimum, what if there was that, like, just... Because I could see somebody freaking out over, like, a form of telekinetic conversation bullshit. That would freak me the fuck out.
Oh, yeah.
You're seeing these things for the first time. Because they reported in the hangar that there was one alive on the gurney.
Yes.
And if that makes a lot of sense, because remember they said the mouth wasn't for communication.
Bingo.
So what if it did make select? And then there's the possibility idea that say it could be a couple possibilities, but say it's trying to make a connection with you to communicate with you, but it's in a fuckload of pain. So maybe that communication gets skewed into your brain, like it's sending its pain patterns and everything into your fucking brain, which just creates chaos inside you. Or maybe the download's fucked and it's trying to find a way to jack into your brain, which just fucks you up anyways.
Dude, what's the difference between that and possession?
Not a lot.
Not a lot. Crazy.
All right, so...
Crazy.
Now we have a Jack Rodden Sr., and he told several, or he kind of went on about how they killed it.
What was his name?
Jack Rodden Sr.
Shout out Jack Rod.
Some say it was kept there at Wright Field until it died in 1952.
Oh,
someone
shit.
Else said they ran into it in the basement of one of the buildings at Wright. Another man named Colonel Marion McGrotter went to Wright Air Force Base in the spring of 1948 and said the class was shown pieces of UFO wreckage and a live alien.
So
he heard the alien had later been killed in an experiment. We do revisit this story. I find more on him and what happened, which falls into the next segment of Deathbed Confessions. But it's so interesting. Sick. It's interesting. And it reminds me of that scene from Independence Day where somebody they come into the freak show.
Somebody needs to give us a deathbed confession.
Bro, it's crazy. And they're all like, it's the similarities are uncanny. You know, as the example, Major Edwin Esley, he was interviewed several times and all he would say is that he was sworn to secrecy. However, he did end up confirming to his two daughters and granddaughter that he, in fact, was part of the Roswell incident. While dying in a hospital in Dallas, Texas in 92, his granddaughter brought him a gift. While looking at it, he sighed and said, "Oh, the creatures." The gift in question was a book called UFO Crash at Roswell. November of 1995, Major Patrick Saunders sent out several books called The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell, to which he wrote in, "Here's the truth, and I still haven't told anybody anything." He did end up telling close friends that they were faced with technology greater than ours and that we had no idea what their intentions might be.
Exactly. Exactly. I feel like that in itself would be enough to spark global panic because it's proof that these things are real. It's proof that they are beyond our capabilities. And it almost proves that we don't know how to kill them.
True.
Which makes for the ultimate foe.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
And that's another thing, like, is were there because now you've just uncovered an entire another layer, because you've got one person that said the being was walking around at the mm-hmm. at the crash site. You got another person that said it died on the table in Washington. Now you got multiple people saying that they saw live ones 5 years later.
Yep. And then there's reports, I think it's Los Alamos, of aliens working in underground labs with humans.
So it can't, I mean, it can be, but based on the narrative that we were given, it can't be all the same from the same crash.
You wouldn't think so, no.
Unless there was some sort of even deeper conspiracy where some of these things weren't from the crash at all. Some of them may have been biologics produced by the government, which we've heard people mm-hmm. talk about, sent out to kind of, like, I don't even know, even skew the narrative at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, the crash itself, what if it prompted the race of Greys to make conversation with the government?
Oh, that's another thing I was going to say. I keep getting all these ideas in my head. Another thing that would have been, you know, mind-boggling, if say the UFO crash was a one-off, the first Roswell crash was a one-off thing, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, oh shit, these things are real, then what if more started coming to recover their buddies?
Exactly.
Because now you know that they have well, obviously they're intelligent, but they have intelligence, they have intent, they know where the F we are now.
Yeah.
Which we're not just a speck of dust in the middle of a giant black ocean anymore. Like, we are a target at this point.
Right. I mean, and like I said, they could look at it from two different standpoints. They're, if they want to recover it that bad, they're going to come in and take it, or they're going to land and create dialogue. Because by all accounts, we had one of them alive.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So if they knew that and they wanted to do a recovery mission, there's only two ways you go about getting them back. You either go in and take them, or you go in and, like, negotiate for them.
Yep.
So I'd say that's a strong possibility. Now, that Saunders guy, he even apparently bragged about how well he covered up the paper trail associated with the cleanup of Roswell. You have Private Francis Cassidy, who was an MP and said that he was assigned to guard the P3 hangar and said he's seen the bodies inside. Corporal Robert J. Lydia and his wife were watching a TV show about the Roswell incident, and she asked, "Well, dear, is it true?" And he said, "Well, I suppose it's time I should tell you I've been meaning to for a long time now."
Yes.
It is true. It's all 100% true. He told his wife that one day he was grabbed to guard Hangar P3 and that he waited for a chance to peek inside. And when he did, he saw wreckage and small bodies being prepared for shipment. Then there was a Sergeant Homer G. Rollett. And before passing in 1988, he told his son Larry that he was a part of the cleanup detail. Homer had seen everything. He handled the memory material, which was tinfoil-like, that kept its shape. He described the actual ship, which was somewhat circular. He also told his son that he saw three little people. They had large heads, and at least one was alive. His father also told him that there were three sites. One was north of Roswell, and the other two were near Corona. He also ended up telling his daughter right before he went into surgery, "I was at Roswell when they recovered the spaceship in 1947. I was involved. I saw it. It's all true." And then he apologized to her for not telling her sooner, but he was told to keep quiet. And one can assume he didn't want to risk the lives of his family by revealing that secret.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
There was a Master Sergeant Harry Telesco, And he had already passed when investigators got a hold of his family. But his daughter said her father had spoken many years ago of seeing the wreckage and the little bodies there. And once again, he said one of them was alive. Then another person, Private First Class James Sane, told family members the same thing. I was at the crash site and I saw little bodies. Sergeant Melvin E. Brown witnessed the landing on the moon and decided that was the time to tell his family the truth, to which the family didn't believe him. But he also warned not to tell anyone because he would be in trouble. On his deathbed, he spoke a lot about Roswell. He said over and over, it wasn't no damn weather balloon. The family actually refuses to discuss it any further to this day. However, his daughter did say she wanted people to know what her dad's dying words were. And he said, and I quote, "It was approaching dusk when one other soldier and I were stationed in one of the ambulance trucks at the recovery site. Everything was being loaded onto the trucks, and I couldn't understand why some of the trucks had ice or something in them. I did not understand what they wanted to keep cold. Our orders were not to look under the canvas tarp in the back. The moment we had a chance, I pulled back the covering. There were bodies. Small bodies, and they had big heads and slanted eyes." It was written in the book how the family still fears the government if they say too much, which may mean there's a lot more to his story that will go to the grave. In September of 1989, a cancer ward nurse got to hear a confession from one of her patients. The nurse in question was Mary Ann Gardner. Now, she couldn't remember the name of the patient that confessed the story, but she definitely didn't forget what she said. She said the woman in the cancer ward didn't have any visitors, so naturally she was concerned for her. So Gardner spent as much time with this woman as she could. The woman in question would tell her stories about the crashed spaceship and the little men she had seen. She said what a lot has spoken about. They found a spaceship out in the desert and there were bodies on the ground. Little people with big heads and large eyes. The army had shown up and chased them away and said, if you tell anyone about this, the government could always find you. And this is an interesting statement because of the time. They spoke like they had the same type of technology that we have today. To make that bland statement of, we are the government and we can find you wherever you go. That's a bizarre statement for 1947, I feel like.
Yeah.
Or a little bit overconfident statement, I guess. I should say.
Yeah.
It's interesting, right?
Yeah. Because they say they got 50 years technological advance on anything that us little Johnny Q public even get a morsel of.
Right. So the woman... she was one of the people that were referenced in an earlier episode. So I think it was the second episode. I don't remember. But I talked about there being a third crash site and a group of archaeologists finding one of the crash sites. This woman that was laying in the cancer ward in a Florida hospital was one of those women. She said she was a part of a team that was out hunting rocks and looking for fossils. Even as this woman is laying on her deathbed talking about this, she was looking around as if she was frightened, like they were truly listening in on what she was saying in that very moment. It makes you wonder what more of the story people are leaving out, because people like this woman in the cancer ward would tell people about it, then get to a certain point and be like, oh, I can't go any further. You know, I just can't do it. I'm going to get in trouble or worse.
Isn't that crazy?
It's nuts, dude.
You are dying. Like, you are in your last days on this earth and you're still afraid.
Yep.
That what you say could affect, I'm assuming, her family at this point.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's nuts.
That's goddamn.
It's crazy. So oddly enough, the investigators start looking into this woman and they tried to get records from the hospital, which were denied. So they start looking through the archaeology records and in fact find some women that fit the description. So they reach back out to Miss Gardner, the nurse that was taking care of her, right? Once again, the nurse was listening to this woman. They reached out to the nurse that had been listening to this woman and hanging out with her while she was on her deathbed. The investigators would call several times and get no answer. So they ended up writing Miss Gardner a letter with names and theories on whom this woman could be. And I assume sending her the list of names was to maybe spark her memory and being like, oh yeah, that's it. That's the lady. However, the letter was never returned or answered. Then later on, when they would call her number, they said a gentleman's voice would answer the phone and say, you have the wrong number. So what happened to Miss Gardner? Was the paranoid cancer patient right? And the government had been listening in the whole time somehow?
Oh, man.
And that by confessing her the story, and then Miss Gardner moving forward and confessing it to the investigators.
Collateral damage.
Collateral damage. It's crazy.
I want to be in a position where I could be collateral damage someday.
It's crazy, dude. So everyone remembers Sheriff George Wilcox. Well, this event apparently left him fucked up over the years. Inez, his wife, before she passed away, told the granddaughter that after this event, he was shocked and never wanted to be a sheriff again. He was like, fuck this, I'm done. I don't want this job. I don't want anything to do with it. For George, once again, the military showed up and said, if you speak about this, we will kill you and your entire family.
Oh.
So they just cut and dry for the sheriff. They're like, okay, Listen, we're not sugarcoating this shit.
I get it.
You talk, everyone dies.
Enough said. Copy that.
Mm-hmm. But the granddaughter told investigators that someone stopped by and told Wilcox about the incident. He ended up going out there and found a massive scorched area. On top of that, he saw four space beings. Their heads were large. They wore suits like silk. One of the little men was alive. Then there was a Myers Wani. He was a full-blooded Comanche Indian who piloted B-24 Liberator bombers during World War II.
That's sick.
His crew referred to him as Chief, but by 1947, he was a top-tier security officer. He was stationed in Colorado and was ordered to go to Roswell to oversee transport of top-secret items. He was to go from Roswell to Fort Worth in a special B-29 flight. The item was to transport a large wooden crate. He was supposed to sit in the bomb bay while transport took place. I also read that these planes had to fly super low during this trip because the bays weren't pressurized. So they didn't want the people in the bay to die of lack of oxygen, or possibly it damaged the bodies that were being transported.
Weird.
Anyways, in 1980, Wani saw a segment on the Roswell incident on the show In Search Of. In his final year of life, he decided to tell his family. They interviewed his daughter, who told them this is what he said. The Roswell incident was true. He had flown with the alien bodies from Roswell, New Mexico to Fort Worth, Texas. There were three sites. He said to the family that whatever you do, don't believe the government. It really happened.
Fuck yeah.
Now, earlier I mentioned Colonel Marion M. McGrotter. Well, this is his story. He was a part of the Air War College at Maxwell Field in Montgomery, Alabama. This class was filled with high-ranking officers, literally deemed to represent the best and brightest in their branches of military. This class was scheduled to last 1 year, from late July 1947 to early June in 1948. This class had been in session for months, and in early 1948, all of the members were taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They were told their opinion was desired and of the utmost importance. All of these guys had no idea what to expect, and I'm sure they weren't counting on what they ended up seeing. They were led into a room and told about the recovery of an extraterrestrial spaceship that crashed near the town of Roswell, New Mexico. Most of the officers hadn't even been aware of the crash and were flat out startled when some of the wreckage was brought into the room. Now, after everyone had the chance to examine the crash, they were taken into another room. There, they were shown something that would haunt McGrotter for the rest of his life. McGrotter was on his deathbed 50 years later. The class was told that it was a survivor of the Roswell crash. He said the creature was under 5 feet tall, human-like but with longer arms, larger eyes, an oversized hairless head for its small frame, slit for a mouth, no nose or ears, just small orifices. In his mind, he really related it to a small childlike creature. But McGrotter said to his granddaughter that there was no doubt that it came from another another planet. So this whole war class was taken into two rooms. The first one, they got to look at the wreckage. And the second one, they saw body.
That'd be so fucking cool. That'd be so cool.
It's crazy.
I want that shit to happen. I want to be sent something that I see it. I'm like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's an alien.
Yep.
That's a crashed UFO.
Be fucking rad.
Dude.
So other military people also had the same descriptions of aliens. Captain Oliver Henderson described them as reminding him of Casper the Ghost.
That's weird.
Major Jesse Marcel said they were white, rubbery figures. McGrotter described the live figure before him as squiggly.
What?
That's what he said. Squiggly.
Huh.
McGrotter later learned that the military were conducting... And I need to recant. When the war class was brought into the second room, they were face to face with a live alien, not a body.
That's what I thought, because you said it first, and then it was.
Yeah, I kind of fucked that up there. So that's my bad.
Either.
Oh yeah, definitely fucks you up a little bit. McGrotter later learned that the military were conducting experiments on the alien, but it died in the process. So what, Steve? That's at least three different live alien accounts that we've heard.
There's a live one at this site, which could be attributed to any of the live ones other than that.
Sure.
But then there, one was alive in Washington where it died.
Mm-hmm.
One was alive here.
Mm-hmm.
They said one was alive in the basement in...
Yes.
At Wright. And then there was...
And I think this account is at Wright as well, if I remember correctly.
And it makes you wonder...
Yep, they were taken to Wright.
It makes you wonder if there wasn't a live one on the one going to the Fort Worth base.
Very well could have been.
Because, yeah.
Because obviously he didn't tell the whole story either.
Yeah. Because that would have been Carlson Air Force Base back then, I think. I just looked it up. It's not Carlson anymore because they shut it down in 93. Now it's the Joint Naval Reserve something or other. But anyway. Could have been a live one on that one too.
Sure.
But we won't assume that. We'll just go by what the... So we got at least three accounts of them being alive.
In different spots. Yep.
Because you can't have one die in Washington within the same week and then have one also alive in Wright.
Yeah.
Years later.
Yeah.
You just can't do that.
So people have actually picked apart the McGrotter story with high claims of the class never existing. However, the investigators... were able to find three separate documents that would prove otherwise. So nice try, naysayers.
Nice try, nerds.
It states by name, Colonel McGrotter's name, and a class fucking photo.
Hmm.
Which the photo is shown in the book.
Hmm.
And I'm going to end it.
What do you have to say about that?
Oh, shit. I'm going to end it with this. It's a complete 180, but it's something that I really respect. CIC Officer Sheridan Caveat, a man who was involved with the Project Mogul cover-up. He ran insanely heavy interference into the Roswell incident. This man, to the day he fucking died, never told the truth. He took his oath that serious. They even tried getting his son, who was a fucking lawyer, to go and get a sealed confession that would only be revealed after he had passed. Caveat said, no, it's not happening. I'm not ready. They pointed out how he died with no medals, no awards, not one single acknowledgement of what he did in those years. It's unfortunate because Caveat did spend the ending years of basically being in a bubble, as his son described it. He's like, I only had half of a father after that point. I want to say, you know, my piece on Caveat. In the book, it described a man that was afraid or intimidated. And I would actually argue Caveat was a proud man, an honorable man, a convicted man who wouldn't budge. Sure, the knowledge of his family possibly being hurt is a motivating factor. But some men, some people, take their oath serious. Some people hold their words to the highest standard. I believe this was a part of Caveat. I think he took his oath serious. He believed he was a part of something bigger and doing his job until the day he died. As much as I hate that he was concealing the truth, I absolutely love the fact that even though this man knew people from all walks, military, civilian, all of the above, were blowing the whistle on Roswell and telling their truth, this man, even knowing all of that, said, nope, I ain't saying shit. I'm taking this to the grave like I signed up to do. That, ladies and gentlemen, I can very much respect, and I'd be willing to bet Steve and I would be one of the very, very few that can respect the fact this man kept his word, kept his oath, and did his fucking job.
It's hard.
Think about that, dude. I don't know how long. I mean, you could be talking 20, 40, 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
After the incident, that dude kept his mouth shut.
Dude, I don't know if I could do it.
I wouldn't. There's no fucking way. I'd be talking.
I'd immediately blabbing. Tell you. I'd be
hell
like,
yeah.
Sorry, Kyle. I just put you and your family in grave danger, but.
I saw aliens.
Yeah, aliens are real, bro.
Yeah, I saw them.
That's hard ass.
But I think it's fucking gangster, man. Yes. I think, like I said, you know, back then there were dudes that their word was everything.
Old, I was going to say, it's old head mentality.
I love it. I love it. I admire those motherfuckers.
I could not do it. I'd immediately be like, Kyle.
Same.
Kyle, I'm sending you photographic evidence of aliens.
Yeah.
And the military's probably going to kill us. So, sorry.
Bet.
Sorry about you, but hey.
It's happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wanted to end on that because, it's like
tough
I said.
Guy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I have a deep appreciation. And it's so contradictory to everything that we are.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the same thing.
But man, you can't help but admire some of those people.
Because you got to think of the weight that he carried on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Because it's the same weight that shattered some people's whole existence.
Yeah.
And dude just sat there just chewing on it.
Trucked through it. Took it. And I'm sure it weighed on him because, man, you know how you get caught up in a moment and you let something slip.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So I get that whole like living in a bubble, having half a dad shit.
Yeah.
Because he's you know, at the same time he is protecting his family because he don't want to let shit slip because maybe that means that his kids get taken in, you know, bad things. But I had to say something about it.
Especially if it was something life altering in a negative way, that these beings existing is a life altering event in a negative way. You would have to keep that and not be able to warn your family.
Yeah, that sucks too. That sucks a lot.
It's crazy. I'm not saying that was the case, but you can almost infer that to a certain extent about, because some people just lost it, you know?
Yeah.
After getting in there, disappeared, all kinds of shit. Like, be heavy.
Yeah. But I don't know. It to me is just rad that he took it.
Oh, yeah.
He just took it on the chin and said, fuck it. I'm carrying it.
Yeah. The military's like, hey, aliens are real. If you tell anybody, we're going to murder you and your whole family. He's like, okay. No, we told you aliens are real. He's like, all right.
Yeah. I get it. I get it.
I was there, bro. I was there.
It's scary as hell.
You're not telling me anything I don't know. That was awesome. That was an awesome series.
Once again, I just want to shout it out again because I cannot give all credit to Thomas J. Carey and Donald R. Schmidt. The book is Witness to Roswell, 75th Anniversary Edition, Unmasking the Government's Biggest Cover-Up. Buy the book. I bought the book and the audiobook, and I left out fucking tons of information. So there's so many more accounts in that book. It is fucking unreal. And it's just, if you're a fan of it, I would highly recommend getting it.
Yep.
Steve's got the book too. So technically between the two of us, we've got it three fucking times.
I saw some people on Spotify between the people crying about the ads saying that they were purchasing the book.
So hell yes. Good.
That's sick.
I'm telling you, it's worth it. If it is worth it. Just the, like I said, it is fucking unreal.
And at the very least, just know that you're supporting boots on the ground, independent journalism.
Yes.
Because we need that shit. Because the stuff that mainstream media is feeding us, obviously is not real. So you have to support independent journalists who go out there, put in the work, put the boots on the ground, put the time in, at the very least.
Yeah, it's, I'm telling you, like.
What did you say? They interviewed 600 people.
Over 600 people.
That's bonkers. I don't even know 600 people.
I know. It's nuts, dude. It's nuts. Like, it's just so much fucking information is in that book. It's unreal. It's unreal.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Sick series.
It was good, man. It's good.
It only took us 7 years to get to Roswell.
Literally the biggest UFO incident. Yeah. To me. And like I said, this book will help. Like, it'll blow your mind. Like I've stated before in the show, in regards to this Roswell case, you had no idea the scope, the magnitude of Roswell, how big it actually was.
That's sick.
How well organized it actually was. All the people involved is fucking crazy.
Yeah. It does really, really paint a picture as to, on one hand, how they kind of fumbled it in the beginning, but on the other hand, how ready they truly are.
It's crazy. That was in 47, bro. That was in 47.
It almost makes you wonder if it was all put to plan exactly how it wanted to go down.
You almost think it had to, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost like distract them that there was a UFO. Then we'll muddy the water and we'll go in there and take care of everything.
It was nuts, man. It's nuts. It is nuts. But sick. I love it. I love it.
That was sick. And yeah. If you haven't listened to the other three by this point, stop being dumb.
Agreed.
Go do it. Yeah. Now you're behind the eight ball. So thanks for hanging out with us. Hope everybody has a good Monday. And I need to start doing this. Tune in next week. I wasn't going to do a UFO episode because we just did four UFO episodes, but instead I did a UFO episode.
Yes.
And this episode reminds me so much of Kyle. I'm so excited to do it.
Fuck yeah.
He's going to love it. You're going to love it. Be sure to tune in next week. Till we meet again, stay safe, stay weird. And in the words of the chief, the B-24 bomber, don't trust the government. Just don't do it. And if you have a deathbed confession, I know two guys who'll listen to you.